Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live, Saturdays from 9 to noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM in BC, Canada. For more information, check out www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye.
In just 3 years of war, 2.5 million people have died, and another almost 2.5 million people have been displaced in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Forgotten or unknown by many, Oxfam calls this war the world's biggest humanitarian disaster. With us today is Asad Ismi, a writer on international politics, to talk about Western neocolonialism, Canadian business connections, and the Congo. Good morning, Asad. Welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Now, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has a long and tragic history of Western exploitation. Can you tell us briefly about the Belgian role in the Congo?
Yes, of course. It started in 1885 when the Berlin Conference divided Africa between European countries, and King Leopold II of Belgium got the Congo as his personal property. And Belgian rule lasted from 1885 till 1960. And in this time, 10 million Congolese were killed. The population of the Congo was cut in half. And there was widespread slavery, forced labor, and torture aimed at extracting the maximum amount of ivory and rubber from the Congo. And the people of the Congo probably suffered more than any other colonized group. For instance, their hands were cut off for not working hard enough, and on one day, 1,000 severed hands were delivered in baskets to an official. And these kinds of atrocities gave rise to the term crimes against humanity. That is where the term comes from.
Now, the Belgian rule ended in 1960 with the democratic election of the African legend, Patrice Lumumba. But now the United States had a significant interest in Africa at this time. Can you tell us how these factors played out after that election?
Yes. The United States wanted to take over the Congo from the Belgians, just like it wanted to take over the rest of the colonized world, the rest of the Third World, from the other European countries like England and France. So in Belgium, they had no intention of letting in the Congo, they had no intention of letting the Congolese rule themselves. So the first elected leader of the Congo was Patrice Lumumba, and he was killed under the orders of the U.S., and his assassination was ordered by President Eisenhower himself. The CIA sent its agent to the Congo with biological toxins to kill Lumumba. However, Lumumba was killed by one of the CIA's own agents rather than this biological toxin, and he was Mobutu. Colonel Mobutu, who was in the pay of the CIA and who was then put in place of Lumumba and who ruled the Congo for the next 36 years. And he continued the exploitation and the massacres and the torture that had been started by King Leopold.
So maybe you could tell us about this period when Mobutu was in power.
Of course. He was Africa's most brutal and corrupt ruler. And something like one-third of the Congolese population died under his rule from malnutrition. While this was happening, he was plundering the country and was, by his own admission, one of the three richest men in the world. The Congo's infrastructure lay in a wasted state. Nothing ran in the country, nothing worked because Mobutu was plundering the wealth and while he was massacring and torturing thousands of people. And this was all backed by the United States, which gave Mobutu $1.5 billion in economic and military aid. And in exchange, Mobutu essentially opened up his economy to Western multinationals and let them take over the whole economy. And this is a really important point because the Congo is, the reason for Washington's interest in the Congo is its mineral wealth. and that is copper, cobalt, and cadmium deposits. It contains 80% of the world's cobalt, which is essential for jet aviation, defense, and other high-tech production. It contains 10% of the world's copper and one-third of the world's diamonds, in addition to considerable reserves of gold, uranium, and manganese. And there are many other resources they have, such as coltan, which is used in cell phones, jet engines, fiber optics, and they have timber, oil, coffee, tin, zinc, palm oil. I mean, they have a huge amount. So this is what really the West is, and specifically the U.S. is interested in. This is what was happening in Mobutu's rule, that the West was plundering the country, and Mobutu was having his share. However, this did not... This lasted until the early 90s, and then Washington got sick of Mobutu because he was taking too much. He was not sharing it enough with the Western multinationals, so they decided to overthrow him.
What happened with his overthrow?
Well, then they sent the Rwandan army with the agreement of the U.S., the Rwandan army invaded the Congo in October 96. And Rwanda and Uganda both invaded. And Rwanda and Uganda are essentially U.S. proxies. And they do things in agreement with the U.S. and to advance U.S. aims in that region of Africa. So they kicked out Mobutu in that invasion. He ran away to France. And in his place, they put Laurent Kabila in power, who was, as a figurehead leader, he was a Marxist, and he was an exiled Congolese Marxist opponent of Mobutu's, and they thought that they could control him. But as soon as they put him in power, he asked them to leave, and then this dispute started between the three of them. So they left, but then they invaded again the next year on August 2nd, 98. Rwanda and Uganda invaded the Congo and occupied the eastern half of it, and they proceeded to kill thousands of people there and exploit that area, essentially plunder and loot that area and send the goods to the West. So the plundering and the looting continues in the eastern Congo up to today.
Now, how have the Western businesses supported this plunder and genocide in the Congo then?
They have played a major role because there is no way that the occupation of Africa's biggest country, half of that country going to invaders, there's no way this would be tolerated without the backing of Western companies and Western governments, which have been solidly behind Rwanda and Uganda. They have been amply rewarded by the West for invading the Congo, and especially by the U.S. The significant institutions that have backed them include Sabena, which is the Belgian national airline, which is transporting the coltan exports of Rwanda from the eastern Congo. And we have to remember that anything these countries do in the eastern Congo is illegal. This kind of export, this kind of plunder and looting is totally illegal. Their occupation is illegal too. So they're taking out a lot of the resources from the eastern Congo with the help of Western companies and governments. So Rwanda's coltan exports are transferred by Sabena, the Belgian national airline, while Citibank carries out the required financial transactions. Then the U.S. honorary consul in the eastern Congo, his name is Ramnik Kotecha. He promotes deals between Rwandan coltan sellers and U.S. companies. And then there's uncertified timber coming from this area, from the eastern Congo, which is being imported by companies in Belgium, Denmark, Japan, Switzerland, and the U.S. And Western governments have also rewarded Rwanda for invading the Congo by doubling aid to Rwanda from $26 million in 97 to $51 million in 99. And these donors were the U.S., Britain, Denmark, and Germany. Then there is a U.N. report which has some of this information in it, which lists 35 companies in illegally importing minerals from the eastern Congo to Rwanda, but does not give the national origin of these companies. But the destination of this material is in the West. 26 of these companies' destinations are in the West, and their names are include Cogem, Transcentra, ISA, Fincard, Cogecom, Trademont, MDW. A lot of them sound like Belgian companies or European companies, but one of them is Banro Resources, a Canadian company. Of these companies are importing, 10 of the 35 are importing coltan to Belgium, 3 are importing the same to the Netherlands, 3 to Germany, 2 to Britain, and 1 to Switzerland.
Can you tell me more about that Canadian connection?
Right. The Canadian companies are heavily involved, like the other Western companies, are heavily involved in the Congo. And at presently, there are 10 Canadian companies in the Congo. These are all mining companies. And that is a huge number. They are Barrick Gold, American Mineral Fields, Tenke Mining, Banro Resource, Consolidated Trillion, First Quantum Minerals, International Panorama Resource, Melchior Resources, Samax Gold, and Starpoint Gold Fields. And these companies have been awarded concessions in mining copper, cobalt, gold, platinum, and zinc deposits. And 6 out of 10 of these companies are, interestingly enough, headquartered in Vancouver. And the ones in Vancouver are American Mineral Fuse, Consolidated Trillion, First Quantum Minerals, International Panorama, Starpoint Gold Fields, and Tenke Mining. The example of Tenke Mining is particularly interesting because it had signed a deal with Kabila even before he came to power. They signed a deal with him in May 1997. And at this point, he was head of the rebel army. So this deal that they signed with him was confirming the deal, an earlier deal they had signed with Mobutu. And similarly, American Mineral Fields also signed a deal with Kabila when he was head of the rebel army, and that was also in March 97, and this was to develop a zinc mine at Kipushi and a cobalt venture in Kolwezi. And in exchange for this, American Mineral Fields boss Jean-Raymond Bull lent Kabila a leased jet. And also in 97, Kabila sent a representative to Toronto to speak to mining companies about investment opportunities. And he raised as much as $50 million to support his march on Kinshasa, the capital of the Congo. So there are all these Canadian corporate connections to Kabila even before he comes to power.
So now Joseph Conrad said his famous book Heart of Darkness in the Congo, and it symbolically talked about the First World's place in the Congo. What does this continuing role of the West in these killing fields say about us?
It really is very, very unflattering. And the section of my article on the Congo, which is ends with the last section is called Heart of Darkness, I essentially say in it that the destruction of the Congo says much more about the West than it does about the Congo, and it reveals most clearly that the West is largely a criminal enterprise whose prosperity is based on the genocide of third world people and the theft of their resources. And this you can see not just in the Congo, but all over the third world for the last 500 years. And the Congo is mainly the worst example of this kind of exploitation. But if you look at Asia, Africa, Latin America, the West has done the same in all those countries. They have extracted the world's wealth in order to ensure their own prosperity. And all around us in the rest of the world, we see war and famine and starvation and desperation, while the West seems to always be having a good time and seems to be getting more and more prosperous. And this kind of situation, this kind of disparity has been created by 500 years of colonialism and now neocolonialism, and the Congo is merely the worst example of this.
Whereabouts does this whole disaster stand now?
It's still very much the same situation, that they're occupying the eastern half of the Congo, they're killing thousands of people there, the occupying countries, and exploiting the resources, looting the resources, sending them to the west. So there seems to be no settlement of this question at the moment, and my estimate is that the Congo will probably be de facto divided.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me this morning.
Thank you, it was a pleasure.
Asad Ismi is a Toronto writer on international politics, specializing in U.S. foreign policy towards the Third World and the role of Canadian corporations. He can be reached at aismi@sprint.ca. His article on the exploitation of the Congo appears in the October 2001 edition of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives newsletter, The Monitor.
Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live Saturdays from 9 to noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio 102.7 FM in BC, Canada. For more information, check out www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye.